Hello, welcome to episode 2 of Charred and New Haven Pizza Show. I'm Kevin Begley, and this is Frank Zabski. Frank, I'll let you introduce our special guest this episode.
Today, for our special guest, we have the one, only, and the local legend, New Haven Doug Coffin, Big Green Truck.
Uh-oh, that's a lot to live up to. Local
I only tell the truth, Doug. You know that. More importantly, Doug now owns Next Door, 175 Humphrey Street. So that's where we are now. That's where we're filming. And we appreciate you being here and letting us use your awesome restaurant.
It's a pleasure, as always.
And you're our first guest. This is exciting. You're the first guest on the show. That'll always be the history of our Charred New Haven Pizza Show.
Everyone else turned you down? Weren't available?
Well, hopefully not the last either.
Right, yeah, exactly. One and done.
So we wanted to have Doug on as a first guest. And I'm going to be honest with you, because I know Doug pretty well. I teach a lot of my New Haven pizza classes here, so we've gotten kind of a, you know, kinship going on. But anyone that knows Connecticut pizza, at least for the last 20 years, knows about the Big Green Truck. They either know about it or have had Big Green Truck at their house. And it's really legendary. And although I've talked to Doug about this, he's kind of a real humble guy, which is something that I really respect about him. But people... Doug has to take
go ahead, just be blunt.
I feel like you're talking about me. Yeah.
Doug has a lot to be proud of for starting Big Green Truck 20 years ago. So we're going to talk to him about Big Green Truck, the thought, the process, the procedure, and then we're going to lead into his next venture, which is Next Door. So the first question I want to ask you, Doug, is... You know, 20 years ago, New Haven, first, how'd you get here? I know the answer, but I think it's really funny. So tell
how'd I get to New Haven, or how did I get to Big Green Truck
New
Pizza?
Haven. New Haven. New Haven. I think the first
I came
one.
Up to New Haven to go to Yale, and I'm a proud Yale dropout. So this is what happens if you don't finish college.
Doug, what'd your parents think about you dropping out of Yale?
They weren't very pleased with it. And it was funny because I dropped out and I went to go work at a place that no longer exists, the New Haven Food Co-op. And I started in the meat room. And I imagine my mother had a lot of difficulty when she was talking to her friends of saying, "So what's Doug doing now?" "Oh, he's cutting up cows at a food co-op."
Still in New Haven, but doing something a little different.
But it was very useful, and she changed her tune when she'd gone in with some other people on raising some pigs, and she realized that her son could come up and take care of cutting all of them up for her.
There you go.
So, That made things a little better.
Yeah.
So what state are you originally from? Long Island? Or?
Long Island, yes.
I know that's not a state. But.
York.
No, yeah. Culinary background?
None. love to eat. And I was not planning on getting into the food business. And when I started working at the New Haven Food Co-op, it really was kind of a revelation. This was... in the mid-70s, when the food scene was exploding in the U.S., you were having all sorts of fascinating foods coming in. And also, it was the first time I was working with a group of people who really just were passionate about food. And this was a total surprise to me. I grew up as a Yankee, and you don't, you know, you sort of say, "Oh, well, this is very nice," and you don't really talk about food a whole lot. Yeah. And here was a guy I was working with who would take his... day off, the one day off he had the whole week, and he would spend it in the kitchen just cooking up some feast for some friends just because he wanted to try out some new recipe. Yeah. And it was just fascinating. We had team breakfasts, which were basically cooking competitions for, you know, who could make the best treats for the morning. And nice. It just instilled with me a real love for food.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. So came to New Haven in the 70s. Yale grad, started working at the co-op. When did you start going out in, I think you started in the catering business. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the food co-op, like most alternative institutions, went broke because it really didn't understand the concept of making money. And I was left with some knowledge of food, but I was trying to figure out, well, where did I want to do? Did I want to go into the importing business? Because the world of cheese was just exploding at that point. Mm-hmm. I went up and talked to someone in one of the big food importers, and I said, so how do you get into this? I really like the idea of buying. And he says, so does everybody else. But the key to the business is selling. You spend your first years selling and wait for somebody to die who's a buyer.
Yeah. Wow, there you go.
And I knew how I had treated some salespeople, and it wasn't really something that I wanted to be on the other end of.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, okay, I could go in and be sensible and learn to work in a restaurant and develop some serious skills, but that seemed incredibly boring, chopping bunches of onions, which, clue, it really is. So I decided that I would start cooking for some offices that I knew people in, and I'd try and bring them in a lunch for once a week or something. And that was not a big commercial success. If you're interested, I'll tell you why later. Don't do it. And that took me into catering. People pointed out that there's a lot, people are willing to spend a lot more for a special occasion dinner than they were for an office lunch. And I started some introductions there and led to a catering business. And that led to deciding that I really liked to make bread. And I started developing a portable wood-fired bread oven. And the idea was that I would go to a big event and I'd set up the oven, cook off some breads, do a bread and cheese table, and then I'd have a loaf of bread rising that then we would bake off in the oven in front of guests and put it out on everybody's table.
Oh, that's fun.
And that seemed like a great idea, and I did it for a couple of parties, but I couldn't really sell it through other caterers because I would say to them, well, I'm going to show up at somebody's house and I'm going to make my build the oven up and then start a wood fire in it. And they were like, what?
Yeah.
In one of my clients' multi-million-dollar homes, you're going to make a homemade oven and start a fire? I don't think so. Why don't you just deliver the bread? And I was like, but it's food theater. And they're like, yeah, well, we'll wait for the movie. So I started doing breads, and that wasn't going anywhere. But people would hear that I had a wood-fired oven that was mobile. And since this is New Haven, they immediately started asking if I could do pizza in it. And for a while, I said, you know, no, I don't know anything about pizza, which was obviously true, and that I really would try and sell them on bread, and that didn't work. And one day I was working alongside another chef who heard me turn down another pizza job. And he said, Doug, it's your business, I understand, but look around you. There's a bread bakery, maybe one left in town, and there's a pizzeria on every corner. It's not hard to see why. You take some of the bread, put a little toppings on it, and you've got a meal, and people will pay for a meal. And that kind of made sense to me. And at about a week later, our neighbor wanted a pizza party for her son, who was a really sweet kid and would come over and watch us cook on the afternoons after school. And I couldn't really say no to him, so I did a pizza party, and it was just so much fun. It was clearly something that everybody loved to talk about. Everybody loved to gather around the fire, watch everything going on. And I thought, you know, here's something that really works. I had been working in the catering business trying to do everything fresh to for the event, not pre-making stuff and reheating it. Mm-hmm. And it was my strong feeling, still is, that something made fresh is going to beat something reheated every day of the week.
Absolutely.
No matter how technically proficient the pre-made stuff is. So I realized that here was something that could be made fresh. Here was something that could be varied to fit any group that you could come to. We used very simple equipment. All you needed was a oven, some refrigeration, and the pizza bench.
And $100,000.
That I didn't realize. It was very funny because I thought, well, here is a idea that was a novel one. And I started looking around for old trucks because I really liked the idea of this being a ancient production form.
Yeah, sure.
So I thought, well, you know, let's build that by having something nostalgic as a vehicle. And I put a post on a website for old International Harvester truck owners, and I said, has anybody got an idea of what these trucks are like to drive with an oven on the back? Because this is what I'm planning on doing. And to my big surprise, a day later, I got a text back saying, this works very well. We have the exact same thing. We have a wood-fired oven about the same size on the same style truck. And they said it's for sale. It would have been, I looked at it and it was a pretty nice rig. And I asked them, well, why are you selling it? Because I was just about to start on this as a business. And he said, well, we thought it would be a good family business. And we were doing some fairs and festivals. And we took along our little daughter, who was about 3 at the time. And then at one job, we looked up, and suddenly our daughter was nowhere to be seen. Mm-hmm. And we were looking out over a crowd of about 5,000 people.
Oh, boy.
And suddenly we were in full panic mode. It turns out she was just right at an adjoining booth hiding under the table. But they said that made us realize that this was not a family activity. So
wow.
They were selling it. But I thought it's like most people do that, oh, I can build this cheaper, and about 3 times as much was the end result. So
yeah. Now, was the truck green originally?
The truck was green originally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there a lot of the. It seems that the default color for trucks back in the 40s was Adirondack green.
Yeah, that dark green.
Not
so that's the exact color, Adirondack green?
Yeah.
I thought it was like a British Racing green. It's probably similar.
No, British Racing green is a little more vibrant green, a little more toward the Kelly green. But it's got a lot of blue in it, sort of like the blue spruces and other greens. So that's sort of where we started.
Yeah.
Did I manage to use up the whole show?
No. And Kevin alluded to this question, but I just want to ask it again. You know, did you literally, because the truck you bought was green, that's why you called it the Big Green Truck? I mean, where'd you get Big Green Truck from?
Well, it was really hard. It was really fascinating trying to come up with a way of presenting this all to people, both in terms of name and also in terms of logo, because it's really hard to get across the idea that here's this wood-paneled old truck that converts into a pizza oven where people are making this. And, you know, how do you get that across?
Right.
And also, I was trying to think of what would be a good name that would sort of convey some of that nostalgic farm-to-table feel that was sort of before its time, before that really took off. And in part, it was something that was part of my growing up. I grew up in an area that still had some farms on Long Island, and as I was growing up, the whole process was watching these turn into developments and to see all of that going away. So there was a real nostalgia on my part for that farm world, though I never actually spent a lot of time harvesting corn or anything else, which is probably why I like the idea of a farm.
Yeah.
You seem to be kind of a rebel. Like, you just kind of went against the grain, so to speak, as far as
coming
here. It is kind
of true. You know, people often have said to me, well, you know, that's kind of unusual. And I said, I don't mind being unusual. I had been trying to find a sort of design idea for the logo for this. And I stumbled across a lot of the old produce labels. that have, you know, all of these wonderful sort of farm scenes on them. And they all had names like, you know, Big Boy Tomatoes or, you know, Pretty Girl Peaches.
Gotcha.
And so I was like, oh, well, Big Green Truck, that kind of works.
There you go.
And I feel like that's what a lot of people probably called it anyway. Like, they see your truck and they're, oh, the Big Green Truck. Like, it sounds conversational.
Well, it's funny because I have realized that people don't often pay as much attention to color as you think. Because
yeah.
I've had people come up to me and said, oh, we had your truck the other day at this place. And I happened to know that it was not our company, but somebody else who had a red truck.
Sure.
I said, oh, what color was the truck? Oh, I don't know. I think it was red. I said, well, then I don't think it was the Big Green Truck.
That's funny.
So
Doug, you grew up in Long Island. Tell us a little about the pizza on Long Island. And were you a fan of, did you know New Haven style before you came here from Long Island to Yale? And be honest.
Okay. To be honest, I don't think I had more than one pizza in my growing up before I came to New Haven.
Wow.
There were five kids in our family, and we had dinner and all meals at home. You had to, you know, everybody got together 6:30. You had to, whatever you were doing, you had to be there at 6:30 for dinner. And we had some good food, but pizza and going out for pizza was not something. I don't think there were many pizzerias even in the town I grew up in. But it was more coming up to Connecticut where I had my first pizza. And I remember I was visiting my sister who was up at Trinity College, and we went out for pizza. And I was just amazed because it really, you could taste the tomatoes in the pie. It was not a cooked tomato sauce. It was just had a brightness, a flavor to it that I'd never seen anywhere else. Mm. And that sort of started me on knowing what good pizza was.
Amen.
And for a while I lived on Worcester Square right around the corner from Sally's and would go there every now and then, but got tired of waiting in line. But I didn't start off this business knowing anything about pizza. I was more, what I knew was catering. I knew how to make an event go easily for people and how to make it work. And I realized fairly early on that I was not going to be fast enough to make pizza for everybody. An early example was I got a gig doing pizza down at Costco, sort of to demonstrate the thing. And I had brought a bunch of dough, and it was all exploding because it was a hot day. I was trying to pat out these fluffy pillows of dough, and it wasn't going very well, and they weren't turning into very pretty things. And I was like, you know, I need to find somebody who can do this quickly and well, because it's not me. And I was very lucky to have found various excellent pizza makers over time. But really, it's something that the guys make look really easy because they make more pizzas in their first week on the job probably than anybody else who's not a professional will make in their entire life. So, you know, I always say when we're doing the classes that they have to take that into account and not expect that they're going to be able to walk in and just spread a piece of dough out.
Yeah, it's perfecting it over time, right? I mean, you know more than anybody, too.
Yeah, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is that it's an art.
Yeah.
I mean, it truly is. And I think, you know, people fall into a couple different categories. They either get it or they don't. And obviously, there's always the in-between. But at least I find in my classes, I mean, I could tell right off the bat, you know, if people are just innately good at this, or if, like, every pizza in one of my – I term every pizza in one of my classes the Bruce Springsteen. And people look at me and say, well, what's the Bruce Springsteen? And I say, well, she ain't a beauty, but hey, she's all right. And they seem to kind of like that. I've never had anyone, you know, be upset about that. But, yeah, to that point, pizza making is an art. Dough making is an art. And it just takes time. I mean, you can get good at anything you really want to get good at. Mm. But, you know, it's interesting that you you know, kind of figured out, you know, you had this concept and it worked incredibly well. It's working incredibly well, but you kind of knew enough. And I think this says a lot about you to say, hey, you know, it's a good concept. I want to run the business. I want to do this, but I might not be the best guy to make the pizzas.
Well, it's funny because I sort of grew up a lot of as a do-it-yourselfer.
Sure.
And well, I think what made Big Green Truck Pizza work is that it was something that I could not do entirely myself. I knew nothing about old trucks. I knew nothing about making pizza. And that's really funny. I was fortunate enough to have found some really good people who could help me out in that. I mean, it was really remarkable to find a mechanic, Chuck Hilton, who was just really in love with old trucks was an incredibly skillful mechanic. So that was just good fortune.
Now, have you always just had the one truck, or is there multiple?
There are six of them now.
Six now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, I mean, early on, we had a problem of just the, I would come back from a job on Sunday night and wake up Monday morning, and the answering machine, you remember those little things that had tapes in them?
Yep.
It was completely full of messages saying, you know, I want this date, I want that. Yeah. And it was fairly clear that we needed to put on a another vehicle, and then we would keep on doing that. And that was the real challenge, getting people accustomed to driving these older trucks, trying to get the systems down so that it was working well. And I do remember the pit in my stomach as I watched somebody else driving one of the trucks off to a job that I wasn't going to be at.
Oh.
And I was like, well, you know, this is what it's going to be.
God's
get
speed.
Used to it.
Right.
You know?
So it's amazing. I mean, you know, again, I give you a lot more credit than I think you don't want to take, but I mean, it was revolutionary. It basically changed, you know, there's a portion of it that changed pizza in Connecticut, because prior to that, the only way you get pizza is go to a pizzeria. And yeah, you had some people making pizza at home, but you know, there was no trucks pulling up to your house and making fresh pizza off this awesome truck.
Well, right. I think that to sort of expand a little on that, first of all, we changed some of the idea of what a pizza party could be. I mean, when I was growing up, I would hear about things or see on TV shows. You know, it's a bunch of kids sitting around a bunch of cardboard boxes on a coffee table or on a kitchen table, and it was looked down upon. The idea that this could be actually good food presented in a interesting fashion and a good way to entertain a group of people was really kind of a breakthrough. Yeah. The other thing is, I think because, and this is where I worry about taking too much credit, but I think because we had such a nice looking rig and were able to do it in such a professional fashion, that the whole idea of having a food truck to your house for an event became more palatable to people. They were thinking, okay, well, yeah, we could really do this. And because earlier on when I was getting started, there were food trucks were, you know, maybe a hot dog thing or the canteen ones that drove around and had sandwiches on it.
Yeah.
And I think we really changed. There was a big change, and I think part of us doing it well helped that along.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then what brought you to coming to opening Next Door?
Lack of thought. pushing again into a business that I knew nothing about.
It worked the first time, right.
We were at a point where we were looking at expanding our number of trucks beyond what would fit comfortably in our garage. Mm. We thought that what would be great is to save some of our wear and tear on the vehicles. We would look for a place that could be a garage and pizzeria further south so that we wouldn't have to drive 95 down to Greenwich and back, which was turning out to be a real problem. Still is, by the way. But all of the real estate was horrendously expensive. And if you go down and try along the 95 and try and look for a vacant spot south of Bridgeport, there's none. Everything is just jammed. Every square inch is packed. And I'm sure there's some real estate person who says, oh, no, I can fit another one in here. Talk to me. So around that time, the spot that used to be Humphreys, which was adjacent to the truck operation, became vacant. And we thought, well, maybe we'll just do something here. The advantage is we'd be able to keep an eye on things. We'd have our production facility nearby. And it looked like all we had to do was put some pizza ovens in the back big open room. And as people who are familiar with construction understand, that that was a dream. And what we ended up doing was a complete rehab of the building, of the space, not the whole building. If you're going to do this, well, you might as well do this. And you know what would be really good is if we did this.
Uh-huh. And it snowballs.
As a result, we have an absolutely gorgeous space that... cost a whole lot more than we expected, and we hope everybody comes down and continues to enjoy it and continues to do parties in it, because we have a beautiful large room that we do basically the equivalent of the pizza parties in. But it was an attempt to try and expand the range of our product of people. When we would do stuff at the local farmers market down in Milford, would say, oh, where can we get this on a regular basis?
Yeah.
And so that's what we hope to do. And for some people, that's really how it's been. They're very happy regular customers.
A really neat building. This is my first time here. It's really neat inside. I know, Frank, you're obviously familiar with it because you do your classes. But, it's an unbelievable facility.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think the big takeaway is that if you love Big Green Truck Pizza and you don't want to wait for the Big Green Truck to be at your house, A, you could come down here at the restaurant and get Big Green Truck Pizza in this awesome wood-fired gas assist oven, or you could rent out the room in the back and have, quote-unquote, a Big Green Truck party in the back.
Yeah, because not everybody wants to do something at their house or has space for 50 people to suddenly come in if they want to do a birthday party or a kids party or, all sorts of graduations, things.
And there's a beautiful bar in the front. The way this place lays out, and we'll try to get some pictures in here, but there's a beautiful bar in the front. I call it Cheers in New Haven. Then in the middle, there's kind of like this real traditional kind of old school Italian booth place that you can eat with your family. And then in the back is another small bar, but that's where kind of the party room is. And where I do my pizza classes, actually Doug does his own pizza classes, and they do birthday parties and other things back there. So it's a great space. And the most important thing, I think, is the parking is ample. There's a huge parking lot adjacent right to this building, which is great. It's literally 2 minutes off the highway. If you've never been here, check it out. It'll be worth your time. I guarantee that.
We'll guarantee that you'll be happy here.
Doug, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah, this was a great conversation. Yeah. And we'll talk to you the next time on the next episode. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, YouTube, all the social media, Charred New Haven. And remember, it's not burnt.
It's charred, baby.